sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. On the weekend of May 30th and 31st, I was at the Left Forum in New York City, held at John Jay College. A group of regional 9/11 truth folks collaborated to put on four panels at the Left Forum that were related to 9/11. All four were accepted by the Left Forum to their credit. And these are the titles of those four panels. The first one was Dangerous Scapegoating of Islam, Exacerbated by the Left's Silence About Controlled Demolition on 9/11. And one of the members on that panel was one of our local engineers. The second panel was called The 2001 Anthrax Attacks and the Challenge to the Left. And the panelists were Dr. Graham McQueen, Barry Kissen, and Dr. Merrill Nass. These are probably the three most knowledgeable people about the anthrax attacks that occurred around 9/11. And I will be sharing their presentations with you at a later date. And then the next panel was Evaluating the Consequences of the Post-9/11 Era, Redirecting Our Future. And involved with that was Les Jamieson of Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth and Mark Crispin Miller, a professor at NYU, who's also written several books on electronic voting machines and election fraud. And then the last panel was the one that I was chairing, and that was called The American Deep State, How Capitalism Has Subverted Democracy. And the panelists were author Andrew Craig, author Russ Baker, and professor and author Dr. David McGregor. The most memorable thing that I took away from the Left Forum in general was what was missing. There were lots of tables selling books on Marx and Hegel, on Marxism in general. Some tables had books on racism. There was one table that had something on the TPP, and one table had something on the Patriot Act. And there were a lot of leftist socialist organizations selling newspapers and flyers, etc. But aside from what we brought on 9/11 and anthrax, etc., there was nothing on the multiple assassinations of JFK, MLK, RFK, and their impact on our society. There was nothing on the Oklahoma City bombing, nor the Boston Marathon bombing, nothing on Charlie Hebdo, nothing on false flag events, nothing on anthrax, nothing on Zionism, nothing on the BDS movement, and nothing on 9/11 at all. If we weren't there, there would have been nothing at all on 9/11. There were also some other 9/11 truth supporters there who put on a few panels related to the global war on terror and 9/11, and they were Wayne Madsen, Webster Tarpley, Ray McGovern, and an investigative journalist named Vox, V-O-X. And the website to check out who he is voxnews.com. So voxnews.com. And the title of one of their workshops was ISIS Made in the USA. So if it weren't for the people in the 9/11 truth movement there, the conference would have seemed totally disconnected from the reality of what's happening in our country today. Not that the other issues that they did cover are unimportant, they are, but they just left out a whole big piece of the scenario. But to their credit, they did approve all of our panels and so are open to this message that we bring. So the organizers of the Left Forum really deserve credit for that. I was really impressed with many of the presentations from our panelists and wanted to start sharing them with you today, but the recordings are not ready yet. So instead, I decided to share a speech by Professor Mark Crispin Miller, given on September 13th, 2014, at the annual 9/11 Truth Conference in New York City. Mark Crispin Miller has been vocal about questioning the government's story of what happened on 9/11 and has also edited several books on election fraud. One is called Fooled Again, The Real Case for Election Reform, and another is Loser Take All, Election Fraud and the Subversion of Democracy from 2000 to 2008. And one thing I learned from listening to Mark Crispin Miller and others is that election fraud is as taboo a topic as 9/11. In the speech you're about to hear, he combines both of these taboo topics. So here he is, Mark Crispin Miller.
The reason why it took me until like 2005 to start speaking out on this issue is that I was preoccupied with another issue, which was the issue of stolen elections. And I think some people in this room probably know what it's like to become obsessed with something like that. Just guessing, right? You become kind of a monomaniac and you grab everybody you can get your hands on and they think you're crazy and so on. Anyway, that was my relationship to the issue of our stolen elections. I was consumed by this. So I was one of the few people to notice something, or I should say something else, that was troubling just around the time of 9/11. It was on November 12, 2001, that we got the news that the National Opinion Research Center at the University of Chicago, subsidized by the major media outlets, had completed its year-long count of all of the ballots cast in Florida in the 2000 election. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
The story that we all got from all those media outlets was that the ballot count of all the votes, that is all the ones that hadn't been destroyed, that had been cast in Florida in the Bush v. Gore election contest, showed that Bush had won. Okay? That's what everybody reported, to the point that if you ask anyone today who has a memory of that, what the vote count finally demonstrated, they will say, yeah, it showed that Bush won after all. The reason why this troubled me was that it was false, okay? It was false. The count of all those ballots in Florida, not just in the three counties that were at issue in South Florida, right? If they had only counted those ballots, Bush would have won. But if they had counted all the ballots in the state of Florida, including so-called overvotes, which is appropriate, Gore won. There is no scenario under which Bush won. None. Now, Len Downey of the Washington Post was later heard to say that the reason why they pitched the story that way, that is to say, confirming that Bush won, was that we were at war now. Right? I mean, how can we possibly report that Bush wasn't actually president? How awkward that would be.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So the patriotic thing to do, the pragmatic thing to do, is simply to say, yeah, he won. Okay? Now, as I say, I was concerned about this for years. I then was even more concerned to see that the 2004 election was stolen. There is actually no evidence that Bush won that election. Does that sound like an overstatement? The only evidence that Bush won that election is the official claim that he won it, which isn't really very compelling evidence. At any rate, I'm bringing this up because all the time that I was doing this work, I had the same experience with my book that Bill Pepper has had with his books, you know, no reviews and so on. No one would have me on to talk about them on NPR and that kind of thing. It was a blackout on the book. There's no question about it. Meanwhile, I was enviously watching the growth of this movement, right? Because this is a pretty big movement, and it's a pretty successful movement. And I was envious because there is nothing analogous in the field of election reform. I mean, it is by contrast with this movement, just a tiny cult of obsessives who don't even get along with each other, which tends to happen. Anyway, you know, people from 9/11 Truth would contact me and I'd say, yes, you know, I know. I mean, you only have so much, as they say, bandwidth. Do you know what I mean? But I realized a couple of things. First of all, they're not really two separate stories. They're one story. Because they had to put Bush in the White House in order to pull this off.
That's right.
Right? Let me make clear that I'm not succumbing to the naive delusion that the two parties are fundamentally different. But I do think that if Gore had been allowed to serve his term, there would have been a few things that happened other than what actually did happen. Like they would have gotten cracking on global warming a little sooner. I can feel confident in saying that. They would have had a different energy policy. And I actually don't think they would have done 9/11, because the neoconservatives who were pushing for that, who had tried to get Clinton to attack Iraq in 1998, and he wouldn't do it, you know, they needed to seize the White House. Okay, so the two stories are really related in that way. But they're related in a more important way. And that is that those two stories are only two of many that have been forbidden, that have been ruled out as a fit subject for public debate, and ruled out in the same way. In other words, what happened to me in my book had also been happening to the 9/11 movement, and still is, despite its far greater size. And that is that the cudgel of conspiracy theory was used to completely discredit any attempt to discuss it. That's what I want to talk about here today, okay? I'm going to take you back to another 9/11. In its way, just as horrible for the people concerned, that was 9/11 in 1973. Okay, that's when the CIA helped the Pinochet regime destroy a democratic government and replace it with a fascist regime headed by General Augusto Pinochet. In 1974, a book came out from a CIA-connected publisher called Chile's Marxist Experiment by a guy named Robert Moss, who had been a reporter at The Economist, a very close friend of the far right, extremely close to the military regime in Chile, and on the CIA payroll. This is from the beginning of his book. In the demonology of the left, Latin American coups are by definition the work of the CIA, working in collusion with sinister right-wing camarillas devoid of popular backing. But the coup in Chile was not an everyday Latin American putsch. The armed forces did not move in a political vacuum, and their decision to intervene had nothing to do with Washington. Okay? Mom? What was that? Well, listen, wait a minute. Will all the police officers in the room please turn off their phones? You know who you are. We know. Wait, let me listen. Just listen to the rhetoric here. Those ensnared in the elaborate mythology that was woven around the Marxist regime will no doubt continue to believe, as an article of faith, that Allende went down under the slings and arrows of the CIA, and maybe the rich world in general, despite the fact there is plenty of evidence that the coup was homegrown and widely supported. The whole book is in that vein. So in other words, if you think the CIA had anything to do with that coup, you're crazy. You are a believer in demonology. You are ensnared in a mythology, okay? For kids in the room, trust me when I tell you there is ample evidence the CIA backed that coup and ran it, paid for it. There's a book called The Pinochet File that I strongly recommend. It's like yay thick, and it's all these declassified documents. Peter Kornbluh, the National Security Archive, there's no question about it. It was not a myth. It was not a lie. It was a fact. But it was interesting and significant and typical that this propaganda served the purpose of making that seem like a crackpot notion. By the way, the copy that I consulted at the New School Library, it had a book plate on the inside cover, Compliments of the Chilean Embassy. Gee, I wonder where. Okay. Now, my second example, I have three. This is from the autobiography of Richard Helms, CIA director, arguably involved in the Kennedy assassination. Let me simply say the preface to this book, which is called A Look Over My Shoulder, was written by Henry Kissinger. And he has a few pages on the Kennedy assassination, which, you know, some would argue was his fault, even if he wasn't responsible for it, because he's the one who, without telling the Kennedys, had continued the program of working with the mafia to kill Castro. And that had, anyway, you know, see, I'm starting to sound like I'm crazy. I'm gonna go off on this tangent, you know. At least I'm not using any AV, right? Okay, listen to this now. The events concerning that ever so sad day, he's talking about the assassination of Kennedy. It's ever so sad. The events concerning that ever so sad day have all been laid bare and documented. I have only a few observations to make. First, all of the speculation and conspiratology notwithstanding, I have not seen anything, no matter how far-fetched or grossly imagined, that in any way changes my conviction that Lee Harvey Oswald assassinated Kennedy and that there were no co-conspirators. But consider the logic of what he just said for a minute. No matter how far-fetched or grossly imagined, you mean if it was really far-fetched and grossly imagined, it might change his view? It just makes no sense. Furthermore, I know of no information whatsoever that might have any bearing on the assassination that has been concealed from the public. Okay, well, where does one even begin? For one thing, the CIA to this day has refused to release 1 million pages of documents that Congress ordered them to release years ago. Okay, after Oliver Stone's movie came out, they're supposed to release these documents, they've refused. Okay, let me simply say of these two people that they were, in a sense, professional liars. You know, Robert Moss was a professional liar. He's a propagandist working for the CIA writing untruths. And Richard Helms, of course, is a trained CIA officer and the director of operations and the head of the whole shebang, had been trained in the arts of deception and manipulation, and was also, convicted of lying to Congress about the coup in Chile. So they're not exactly the most credible spokespersons for their respective positions. But here's what's upsetting. Here's what's troubling. I'm going to read you something now from a book by an entirely different expert, someone I admire, whose work is excellent, and that's Naomi Klein. This comes from The Shock Doctrine, which I strongly recommend. I think it's a great book. But listen to this. When the September 11th attacks hit, the White House was packed with Milton Friedman's disciples, including his close friend Donald Rumsfeld. The Bush team seized the moment of collective vertigo with chilling speed. Not, as some have claimed, because the administration deviously plotted the crisis, but because the key figures of the administration, veterans of earlier disaster capitalism experiments in Latin America and Eastern Europe, were part of a movement that prays for crisis the way drought-struck farmers pray for rain, and the way Christian Zionist end-timers pray for the rapture. When the long-awaited disaster strikes, they know instantly that their moment has come at last. So in other words, the idea that they had anything to do with setting it up, impossible, unthinkable, conspiracy theory, right? The problem that we're confronting here today is not just a problem involving the mainstream media, it involves the left press as well.
Yes.
Okay? I noticed my own travails in trying to get election fraud publicized, trying to kickstart a movement for election reform. You can't have a computerized election system that's dominated by private companies whose owners and managers are all far-right Christianists. I wrote this book, etc. I was attacked far more vociferously by The Nation and Mother Jones, and so on, than I was by any mainstream medium, right? Okay.
Test it first.
Yeah.
I was wondering if Bill Pepper was wearing a bulletproof vest. What we're talking about is the rise of the use of conspiracy theory as a rhetorical device specifically intended to shut down discussions like this. The book I want to recommend to you is called Conspiracy Theory in America by Lance DeHaven Smith, published by the University of Texas Press. It demonstrates very clearly that the phrase first entered journalistic discourse in this country in 1967. There is a declassified CIA memo that's in the back of the book. It instructs station chiefs all over the world to use their propaganda assets and friends in the media to discredit a number of recent books on the Warren Commission using the following five arguments, and I won't go through those. The fact is, however, we encounter those arguments still today all the time. Like, if there's a conspiracy, somebody would have spoken up by now.
I've never heard that.
Okay. Let me simply say this, and I feel very strongly about this. Something that I've learned from this kind of work over the last many years is that, you know, most Americans, and by that I don't mean the great unwashed, I don't mean all the boobs out there who presumably buy everything that they're told, because I actually don't believe that that's true. I think people's views are, and opinions are more complicated, their response is more complex. But certainly, our good, well-educated liberal friends, most Democrats, etc., people in the press, are no more sophisticated, are no more capable of rational analysis of the facts than anyone in North Korea, you know, than any fanatical Christianist who thinks the universe was created 6,000 years ago, okay? Than anyone whom we like to point and laugh at as hopelessly deluded, you know, they don't get it and so on. Anyone who thinks that those buildings could collapse at free fall speed like that because of some office fires, right? Anyone who thinks that Hani Hanjour, who couldn't fly a single engine plane, could pilot the plane that hit the Pentagon, right? Anyone who thinks that Lee Harvey Oswald did fire those shots that killed JFK? Anyone who thinks that Sirhan Sirhan actually killed Bobby Kennedy? I'm talking about evidence, facts. People who believe that are just as authoritarian in their responses as anybody else anywhere in the world. This is a serious problem, okay? That skepticism comes to us as lunacy, right? And what is called skepticism is a kind of snickering disinformation. That's what we get, right? So Amy Goodman will have on the kid who directed Loose Change, right? With a goon squad from Popular Mechanics, who bully him and don't answer his questions. And so what are they even doing on her show, right? Pretending to have studied the evidence. They have not, okay? Facts are facts. The problem is twofold. First of all, the people who automatically and reflexively mouth these claims, you know, wave away the evidence. They're somehow cognitively impaired because they can't actually entertain scientific evidence and respond logically to a rational argument. That's a serious problem. I would go so far as to say that everyone who uses the phrase conspiracy theory in this laughingly dismissive way is a witting or unwitting CIA asset. One last point here. Not only are these people, you know, incapable of dealing with a kind of rational argument and assessing scientific evidence, but they also have succumbed to a kind of historical amnesia. Because as Bill Pepper implied, the kind of thing that happened here on 9/11, this concoction of an occasion to attack Afghanistan and Iraq and kick off the war on terrorism, this kind of thing has happened time and time and time and time again in American history. Now, we've all heard about Pearl Harbor, right? Because of David Ray Griffin's great book and song. We all know about Pearl Harbor. We compare this to Pearl Harbor. We've all heard about Operation Northwoods, right? We've all heard about that. But that list is much too short, you know? If you go all the way back to the Mexican War in 1846, you know, that's James Polk used General Zachary Taylor and his 3,500 troops to deliberately provoke the Mexicans into launching an attack so then that we could claim we were responding to aggression. Okay? Same thing seems to have happened in the Spanish-American War and the explosion of the Maine, right? I have to look at my list there, so many. The Korean War, now I'm not saying that the South Koreans started it, but I am saying that if you read I.F. Stone's absolutely indispensable The Hidden History of the Korean War, you see that the Truman administration and General MacArthur consistently manipulated circumstances to make it look as if China was attacking the free world. And every time it looked like peace might be possible, they did something to make sure that that did not happen. They were constantly recreating the pretext which enabled them, with that forgotten war, to kickstart the military-industrial complex and to institute the draft. Its consequences were really quite drastic, considering it's a war that we basically associate with MASH. You know, I mean, what do we know about it? Okay, the Tonkin Gulf, I mean, I can go on with all these examples. Let me simply add that the same manipulation, the same creation of a pretext, has also been used to attack the left for a century. The infiltration of labor unions and of radical groups that's going on even today, right? What we're talking about is a moment at which all our chickens seem to be coming home to roost,
yes,
to quote a famous American. That, you know, what happened at 9/11 is already happening again with ISIS, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've watched the beheadings.
Bloodless beheadings.
I'm not offending anyone, but there are serious problems with those videos of beheadings.
Yes.
The Ukraine crisis, which the press has universally represented as a consequence of Russian aggression and expansionism, was begun by our government with that coup in Kiev and so on. There is no Russian invasion. Let me simply say that what we're all doing here, you know, despised as it is and ridiculed as it is despised and ridiculed for a very important reason. It is too threatening. It's deeply threatening. Because if we are successful at talking around the media establishment and the government, I am far more optimistic than Bill Pepper that we can actually make tremendous strides. Especially at this moment of unprecedented economic inequality, right? The student debt crisis, which is turning a whole generation of young people into peons. The reason why the police departments nationwide are now militarized and in constant contact with the CIA is because they know very well that the population won't sit still for this forever. And if we can succeed in making it clear that these charges of conspiracy theory are just a way to change the subject, just a way to continue to hide the truth, I believe that we actually might be able to accomplish something really great here. So I'm honored to be speaking before you all, and I assure you that it is not in vain, and you should fight the urge to feel that this is a hopeless enterprise, because it's far from it. Thank you.
And again, you were just listening to a speech given by Professor Mark Crispin Miller in New York City on September 13th, 2014, at the annual 9/11 Truth Conference. And just a reminder that 9/11 Wake Up Call shows are archived at the website radioforall.net. And that's the digit four. So radioforall.net. And once on the site, type Cheryl into the search box, and that's Cheryl with a C, and the show should pop up. And I'm going to end the show today with a song by Eva James called Sharing the Truth About 9/11. And here she is.
One day in Manhattan, as could be, till the planes hit the buildings and changed history. They stood for an hour once the damage was done, but then suddenly crumbled. 10 seconds they were gone. There were cascading projections of steel into dust. It looked like explosions, but it was not disgust. So I turn off the TV and shut out the lights. It's all just illusion right in front of my eyes. Sharing the truth about 9/11.
This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.